Yeah, that's a green one. That's pick it up for today.
So we got, yeah, we got the.
You know, Esquivel is really Irish.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry,
Brian, you're missing the green.
So I'm. Uh-oh.
Oh, green. Fair enough.
In spite of this, I'm going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness to order for Tuesday, March 17th. Welcome, guests. So we're going to just proceed in the order in which our agenda was put out. Welcome, Senator Boone. I just tried to
call
do that.
Call me
so.
Out.
No, yeah. I wasn't.
Huffman made me late, sorry. Oh, he's a mate, too.
And yet I was here on time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was here
he's
on
here.
Time.
So.
No, you weren't.
Okay, so first I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2840. So Brian, our other administrator, will introduce us to this measure.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, members of the committee. House Bill 2840 establishes Oregon Educational and Workforce Development Bridge Loan Program in Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs as specified. There is no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact. The statement is not yet issued. And there is a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Revenue.
Okay. And we have three people. So Representative Evans, do you want to go down first? And
I didn't see any work sessions.
Yeah, next Thursday.
Chair Lively, members of the committee. First of all, my name is Paul Evans. I represent House District 20.
Good job.
I can't laugh.
Great start.
Your vice chair is making me laugh. House Bill 2840 is a really very simple bill. I'll be upfront about it. It's what I hope will be the beginning of something that gets larger over time as we can afford it. But right now, the bill is truly what it sounds like, a bridge loan. Last year, while I was spending a lot of time around all parts of House District 20 talking to folks, the thing I kept hearing from a number of vets at Western Oregon University specifically, but a few at Chemeketa as well, was that the revisions of the GI Bill, and again, when you say the GI Bill, there's any number of iterations of it, but when it was redone in 06 and 07 to look more like the World War II version that was not just higher ed oriented but had all types of skills and training, they went back and they updated housing allowance, food allowance, and other things like that. Well, in 2010, the recession was going on, and evidently it got squeezed just a little bit. And the net result is that despite the rules, what's happening out on the street, at least in the college campuses, is that a number of folks that are in school pursuing a trajectory to complete their studies either don't get paid on time because the alignment of when the VHX come out sometimes have gaps or problems, and sometimes those universities have fees that then compound with penalties, and or just the expenses of going to school and in some cases having a family are not covered by the GI Bill like we had hoped it would be. What this does, it basically says we recognize across the country that folks pursuing completion with the GI Bill, that the numbers are actually starting to, a number of folks are not finishing when they start. And what this does, it basically says there's a fund currently that exists at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to use that fund for folks that are pursuing GI Bill to help them finish their studies. One-time shot, they get access to up to one term worth of the benefit that they're receiving from VA to help them get through that tough spot to be able to get to graduation and move forward. It's not a competition for the GI Bill. It is simply a supplement recognizing the challenges that some of our vets and their families are experiencing trying to graduate. And I emphasize that very specifically. In this building, we talk a lot about the 40-40-20 program. We talk a lot about outcomes. We talk a lot about a lot of things. Unfortunately, the GI Bill right now, good, bad, or indifferent, is not getting some of our vets to the completion that it is designed to do. And while an education, even without a diploma, is helpful for understanding life and moving forward, the goal of the GI Bill in many ways is to get them to that employability status, which often requires a diploma, a graduation. So this bill really is designed to do that. Hopefully, we may be able to find some more funds as time goes on to help fill this gap, but it's designed to be a loan program, forgivable loan program, but nonetheless a loan program to help people finish their studies. And that's all I have to say.
Questions for Representative Evans?
That was one thing.
Certainly. Go ahead, Russ.
Would this come into play as well? For some reason, when I had the GI Bill, and I granted that was a long time ago, but there wasn't a lax time between when I applied for it and when I received it. And today, I guess there's quite a lag time here for some reason. Would this be able to supplement that as well?
Chair Lively, Representative Esquivel, it's written to be flexible enough to do that, and especially in cases where folks are mobilized. They're going to school. They happen to be in the National Guard, for example, or the Reserves. They go, they come back, and then they start it up again. It's designed to specifically be flexible enough that ODVA, as long as the person is utilizing the GI Bill to try to get completion, they can be flexible enough to provide a one-time help.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I would, you know, you said one-time basis only.
Well, see, just because of money.
I would be more flexible to, I think it needs to be more flexible because we have different scenarios here. You have a lag time. It's not because of the veteran. It's because of the VA, the federal VA. And then we also have the transitional time when they're coming and going. So I think we should probably open it up for that if we have the money to do it. But it doesn't necessarily mean it will be done, but at least we'll open that door and have it in place in case we do get the money for it.
And Chair Lively, Vice Chair Esquivel, I'm very open to any amendments on this. Unfortunately, I think the driver of how it will be implemented is the $80,000-ish dollars that are in there currently. At one time, there was a vision to have closer to $300,000 to $400,000 annually in there. Mm-hmm. Someday I'd like to have that pot closer to that. But whatever flexibility to help ODVA help as many folks as possible, I'm up for. I just, for the folks at home that are wondering about all the different VA programs and policies, linking it to the GI Bill and its goal of continuing studies to completion is kind of what I was trying to do with the bill.
So when you say forgivable loan, so under what circumstances would it not be forgiven?
Well, I think, Chair Lively, again, leaving it to ODVA's discretion at this point. If it was a perfect world, this would be a grant program, not a loan program. If it was an almost perfect world, it would be a zero-interest loan program. Mm-hmm. If it was a pretty close to perfect world, it'd be something that, depending on what they do in the future, if they actually complete their studies, for example, maybe it's forgivable. But sure. I want to leave as much discretion as I can to ODVA.
So what are this fund, the Veterans Educational Aid Account, so what is that fund supposed to do if it wasn't this?
Chair Lively, when it was originally set up, or at least when it was set up again when I was working for Governor Kongoski, mm-hmm. it was designed to be very broad. Because I think it was so broad in many cases under past leadership, it wasn't used as much as it might have been because I think there was guidance. People were waiting for guidance on it. Not saying that it hasn't been used.
Sure.
But the goal is to provide a little more focus on a specific target, that target being the GI Bill right now, with lag times and some of the pulling back on how much is being paid to the students to be able to complete their studies.
Any other questions for Representative Evans? Doesn't look like it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have I can read Gus Bedwell, but I'm sorry.
Jonathan Sanford is
there. Jonathan Sanford. Okay, please. And just introduce yourself for the record before you speak.
I'm John Sanford.
Okay, John.
I'm a disabled combat veteran. And I'm very honored to have the chance to speak to many of these faces today. Thank you very much. I'm a disabled combat vet, and when I came home from Iraq back in 2006, education and support for veterans was in dire need of updating. And in fact, the whole VA system wasn't really ready for any of us to come home. You know, we had veterans and people coming home in the States were being used, especially in Oregon. National Guard reserve members were used at a level 50% of the fighting forces over in combat, which means that ever since the Civil War, we've never really had this amount of attendance of people in reserve forces in combat. So they weren't ready, is the point. And the reason I mention that is And, you know, support systems all over just weren't put together, especially education. So since that time, I've worked in the office of Congresswoman Darlene Hooley, and then I was a student body president at Portland State University. I lobbied in D.C. for the updated GI Bill with the National Student Veterans Association, which we passed. It was a lot of work, and we loved it, and it was the biggest change for benefits in the last 20 years for veterans. Now, when I left PSU, I joined the office of U.S. Senator Ron Wyden as the Veterans and Defense Caseworker and Advocate, meaning I would get out into the community, but I would also answer the phones and work with veterans on a one-to-one basis. So I was there for the last 4 years, and I handled around 13,000 veterans' phone calls, emails, and letters, with approximately taking on about 2,000 cases a year and handling their individual concerns. So I've been intimately connected to a lot of these problems throughout the state. I'm here specifically in regards to my time at PSU and in support of the bill. When I joined, I'm joined here by Gus Bedwell, which is really good to see him. I've worked with Gus Bedwell and some of these faces for quite some time. And the reason I wanted to announce him is that there was a lot of missing support services on campus. But if there's one individual in this state, one person, that understands these challenges and has been here since the start of it, is this guy. And the reason I say that is that when I came back to Portland State and we tried to find veteran support services on campus in 2006 and 2007, they were in dire need of changing, and a friend and I put together some legislation called the Campus Veteran Service Officer Program. It was passed at that time, and that created campus veteran service officers from the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to get on campuses. The pilot program was at Portland State. At Portland State, I was there at the time as a student body president, and we had a really good opportunity to work and see how it was going to be implemented. There were a lot of challenges with counties and state kind of overlapping, but they got hammered out and fixed, and it came down to having individuals that actually knew what was going on to try to work with the administration. You know, but as a student, I have a different set of viewpoints when that was happening, right? So we had the experience here, but I wasn't on the side of dealing with the administration. I was the one experiencing what the problems were and the effect of it, the actual end user at that time. So I really saw that broken system again and again and again. But what was different at that time compared to today was that with the passage of the post-9/11 GI Bill, as long as you were at least half-time, you could get funding. And that was funding for housing and funding for books, with a book stipend, and they pay for tuition. Right? What we're talking about with just taking a quick step back with veterans funding is making sure veterans that want to go to school, who are usually from non-traditional households and families, who are coming back from combat and people that have served, have an opportunity to go to school. These are people behind their peers, right? They went out and did something for the country, and they're coming back and they want to go to school, oftentimes with families, excuse me. So the reason I mention that is that they come back with this idea and they're sold this concept of the GI Bill allowing them to go to school. But what's changed since then is they stopped doing something called break pay, which means in the different terms between summer, spring, and in winter, between these terms, money is not available. And what this means is they think, oh, I'm going to get my paycheck every month, or I'm going to get the month that I, or the money that I put in, and it doesn't come during those break periods. Now, the VA's argument was that the same amount they'll have to use over their entire period of time. But these are people who are expecting and making life-changing decisions to go to school and to put all their efforts into going to school. And then that check doesn't arrive when they try to have those break periods, like winter and whatnot. So they have to rechange their assumptions about what the GI Bill was going to do for them. So the reason why I mention this is that the VA, in their infinite wisdom, didn't think this was going to affect attendance. And it's obvious that it does. You can't stop getting paid or your paychecks come in and think you're going to be able to take care of your family. So I just wanted to end with two quick points. And the reason I'm saying this as this position is because I think we have really two correlating factors that we have to pay attention to. One is we have 1,000 guys coming back from Afghanistan in June. We have 1,000 young people that are going to make a decision whether to get into the workforce or go to school. I think the best decision financially for the state and for those individuals is to get into education immediately. Find a way to enhance their lives better. They just went through combat, and they've had to go through some fairly tough situations, and we as a community can rise up and help them go to school. The second thing is that they're going to be expecting to use their GI Bill. But people that, for most of them, they are doing their first deployment to the 162. That means they only have a year of service. With a year of service, you only get 60% of your GI Bill. You don't get the full maximum amount, which means the people that are sold this concept, if you have the GI Bill, will not only only get around half of what they expected, but then at the same time, they're not going to get those paychecks during the break periods. So we're going to tell the youth that are coming back, 1,000 of these guys, all of a sudden, you're not going to get paid during the break periods, and it's only going to be about half of what you expect. That's a decision that they're going to have to make, and they're still going to have to try to find a job on top of getting an education. So when these guys go to war, a lot of them leave their jobs, so we're putting them back in the market, and we're putting them in a situation where they have to go through college. So it's going to be tough. I'll end with saying this. This is something we can do. You know, if at the state level and you look around, you say, what can we do for vets? You got 1,000 guys coming home. Break pay is one of these issues that's been a constant bane of the existence of the veterans world. There's about three of them, and this is one of the top three. You guys can do something small here that may not seem like a lot with this bill, but I can tell you as an end user that's dealt with thousands and thousands of veterans that tried to fix this problem back in 2007 when we wrote the legislation and has been dealing with it with my cohort, with my friends, and all the thousands I worked with the senators' offices and the congressional office. This is something that you guys can actually do. You can make a difference. So it's not going to be perfect, and the bill may not cover all the incredible problems, but it has a chance to build to make sure it happens. And when these decisions are being made, this is a chance when you can say, we've done something in July or in June when they get home, shake their hands and say, hey, I did something for you guys, and you guys can go to school. It may not be perfect, but hey, it's something we're able to do. So thank you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer anything. I have a broad range of experience as the end user. I specifically am not so good at telling how ODVA should run. I've made that mistake before, and I will not do it again. As the end user, I can tell you what the experiences are. I can tell you what some of the things that we've seen, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Escobar.
Clarification. You mentioned that if something about the time frame. I was coughing at the time. So
I'm so sorry, yeah.
About 60%. They only receive 60%. If they're deployed for over, I thought it was used to be 90 days if you were deployed, you had full benefits. Has that changed?
Chair,
I was in the old-time service, you know.
Chair Lively and Vice Chair Escobar. This is the problem. This is it. You're on it. They think just as well that they've got benefits, and they qualify, absolutely. But they're not going to get a full post 9/11. And this individual can actually explain a lot better than I can at this point.
Well, how long is the deployment? Excuse me, Mr. Chair, follow up.
Sure, go ahead.
How long is the deployment? Isn't it 9 months or a year?
It is, and you're expected to put 24 months of service in before you can get the full GI Bill. These guys are gone for 15.
Actually, it's 36.
Excuse
36.
Me.
But they don't count their...
You got it. That's exactly the problem we're trying to take care of. Mm-hmm. See, this is a story that every... I'm sorry, may I...
No, go ahead.
Chair. This is a story that every veteran is sold when they get in. And especially active duty get the raw end of the sick because they have to put money into the GI Bill that's taken out of their pay for the first year or so when they're going through training and when they're in active duty. And that money's supposed to be reimbursed to them through the GI Bill. You pay into it. That was originally how it used to be. And so they had this concept that, oh, I'm going to have a full GI Bill. Money's going to come back to me. It's not that way. The VA and everything else, again, is a broken system. It's been broken since day one. Here's how the state can do something. So,
Mr. Chair, I never had to pay in.
Never I don't think had. I did either. But.
It was available.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Representative Evans.
That was a lingering effort of the Montgomery GI Bill. Mm. Prior to the Montgomery GI Bill, as I understand it, that was the era that I got into, was when we had to do a match system.
Really?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Now, post 9/11 has changed that.
Cool.
But...
Other questions for this witness? Okay. Please introduce yourself. Okay.
Chair Lively, Vice Chair Escobar and Boone, and members of the committee, my name is Gus Bedwell, and I currently work as a trainer mentor for veteran service officers with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I'm here today because I have some experience I believe that I can bring to the table. But before I talk about my testimony, Director Smith was going to be here this morning or this afternoon, but he had to step out. So he asked me to convey a couple of messages before I get started. We had talked a little bit earlier about the educational aid program and just kind of wanted to bring everybody up to speed. You know, yes, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs does have an educational aid program. It allows our department to provide financial aid to veterans pursuing education and not receiving any other kind of educational benefits from the federal VA. Mm. In 13-15 biennium, we had roughly $80,000 to administer, as Representative Evans talked about. But during that time, legislature put some less resources into our educational aid over time as federal GI Bill ramped up, and it prioritized the date-limited funds into emergency assistance. So, unfortunately, the biennium, we were only able to grant about $41,000 out, and we held back some and had some holdbacks and addbacks from the legislature that we had to take a reduction in our general funds in early 2014. We made the decision to prioritize the general funds to fully fund the highly leveraged work of veteran service officers and take a reduction in the educational aid at the time when there was the reduction. But we want to be clear, when it's fully funded and operational, we are authorized to pay up to $150 a month, and we have the capacity to serve about 30 veterans per month. These are grants and not loans, so that's a pretty good program that way. But in addition to this, that a lot of veterans are not aware of, especially going to school, is that we have the Educational Assistance Program, the Emergency Assistance Fund that can also grant funds on a one-time basis. And that demand, actually, you know, we go through those funds rather quickly, and we have very few student veterans who actually access it. So I'm going to talk in a minute about some of the things that we could possibly do to resolve some of these issues that both Jonathan and Representative Evans has talked about. You know, the other thing is that Jonathan and Representative Evans has mentioned that we have seen some challenges in the VA, and especially in the post 9/11 GI Bill area. And so I want to talk a little bit about that and explain to you some of the differences that have been made in the last few years and why some of those differences are happening. First thing I got to tell you is that my experience working with student veterans has been since 2009, first as a campus veteran service officer, and then later in 2012 as the military and veterans resource coordinator for Oregon State University. I believe that experience has provided me a unique perspective on the challenges students face today. I'd like to share some of those perspectives with you. When the post 9/11 GI Bill was introduced in 2009, we all saw and heard how the horrendous rollout created significant challenges for our veterans. It's very clear. Some of those challenges were the bureaucracy of the VA. You talked about certification, how when you got certified, you would get your funds right away. The VA created a certification process that was multiple layers and multiple levels when they brought in the post 9/11, because you don't just certify one aspect of the benefit. You would certify for tuition and fees. You'd certify for housing allowance and book allowance. So, a certifying official went to touching a veteran's file once or twice, maybe a term, to high as maybe 9 to 10 times in a term. What this did is it created a processing time of 90 to 120 days from the starting date of a term, okay? That was huge. So it would be into the next term sometimes before veterans would get their funds. In addition, schools not understanding this veteran community and not used to this lag in time were still demanding students pay bills up front, and if they didn't pay them up front, they were assessing them late fees or disenrolling them from school in some cases. So it was a travesty. Then the administrative errors that were made by the VA and or the schools would cause overpayments that would range for 6 to 9 months and into the tens of thousands of dollars for students. Lastly, one of the biggest challenges that we had is because we had this new GI Bill and there was so much information going on, veterans would walk through doors of VA certifying officials or they'd walk through doors of service officers and they would be misinformed on the benefits that they could use or not use. For instance, many veterans were told, hey, this post 9/11 GI Bill, it is the greatest GI Bill ever. Switch to it now. And come to find out when they made the switch that they actually lost benefits. Wow. Believe me, that's kind of crazy to think that the VA would allow you to lose a benefit, right? So when I look at House Bill 2840 and its intent to help student veterans, I understand why it was written. And I even understand why it was proposed. However, though, I want to mention that I've seen some overwhelming challenges from 2009 to 2010 that House Bill 2840 wants to help resolve diminish significantly. For instance, instead of VA taking 90 to 120 days now from the start date of school, the VA has worked with schools nationwide to create an automated and streamlined certification process that can start as early as 30 days before the term even starts. And then the average time to process a certification is 30 days, which means that if they start 30 days before a term starts and they're educating the schools, please start certifying ahead of time. You know, if your student's already enrolled way before the term starts, certify them, get the information to us. That means typically a student will have their funds within the first 2 weeks of the term starting. That's significant. That is, you know, and the other thing is, additionally, most schools have started working with student veterans to where if there is a late fee that's assessed or an interest or anything for that late tuition fees, they will reverse it once they receive the tuition and fees if they know that student is a GI Bill recipient. It doesn't matter whether they're post 9/11 or if they're selected reserve or active duty. They just say, look, you're a veteran. You're coming to our school. We know money's going to be coming to you eventually from the VA. We're going to work with you. And in a lot of school situations, they don't even assess them. They don't put them on the account reading or anything, so that way the student doesn't have to stress, why are these extra fees on there? So there's some significant strides that they're taking. In addition, many schools like OSU, PSU, Chemeketa, and PCC, to name a few, are hiring coordinators or resource counselors whose sole mission is to interact with veterans before leaving service and arriving on campus to help them navigate and eliminate most of these challenges. I believe by hiring these coordinators whose sole mission is to find those veterans on campus and interact with them, to provide a safe, secure environment for them, to explain them what their benefits are, to show them how to navigate through the entire school process, has been what's helped get some of these students through. I've seen it firsthand in both as a campus VSO and also as a coordinator, and then working with other coordinators at other schools. If I know a student is coming from Chemeketa Community College, when I was at OSU, that coordinator would call me and say, hey, Gus, this student is coming. Can you make sure that they have a soft transition into your school? And working with them far in advance. You know, one of the things that we would also work with is helping them articulate military credits. In some cases, working with professors and instructors to talk about, you know, this is one of the challenges you may see, or these are some of the rewards you'll have of having a veteran in your classroom, that type of thing. So in conclusion, you know, I want to just say, as an Army veteran myself and a veterans advocate, I can admire and respect what House Bill 2840 intent is doing of helping veterans. But I'd also like to suggest that we look at other ways as well to motivate and support financially schools to hire coordinators that are not certifying officials or VSOs, but whose whole mission is reintegration, education, advocacy, and cultural awareness of student veterans. When you compare the Oregon schools who have taken the step versus the ones that you can see that have not, you can tell the difference. And it makes in their student veteran success, achieving their education goals, and ultimately employment into the civilian world. I truly believe by motivating and supporting schools in this manner, we can have a stronger impact in veterans for generations to come. I also believe that these coordinators can bridge some of these gaps by educating these student veterans on other resources that are available currently. You would be surprised at the number of students who walked through my door when I worked at OSU who did not file for financial aid, as an example. I'm happy to answer any questions from the committee, and thank you for this time.
Thank you. Any questions by members of the committee? Representative Evans.
Yeah. Again, thank you for all you did for PSU and for places that I wished Western would have stolen you when OSU did. But you mentioned some of the folks that are doing it right, and I'm not going to put you on the spot by asking you to tell me which ones are doing it wrong. But I can tell you at Western Oregon, who has a veterans coordinator, this is where this information came from, 8 different individual vets having the same challenge. So the reason the bill is offered is, and again, open to any types of amendments or adjustments, but I don't think the success recipe at some places is everywhere. And I think that that's the concern. And sometimes it's hit or miss. And years ago when we tried to put a model through that was unfortunately had a fiscal that killed it, mm-hmm. We weren't able to get that accomplished. So the question is this. What steps can ODVA do with a more helpful, perhaps more aggressive, more focused effort from the legislature on getting the schools to maybe match some money to help get these programs going? Is there a particular national model that we should be focusing on? Mm-hmm. How can we actually address both the problems focused on the bill and the other things that you mentioned in your testimony?
Okay. So, Chair Lively and Vice Chair Esquall, Representative Evans, I will agree that there are some schools that are challenging and in their process. And what I would say is that one of the things that I've been asked to do because of my experience and working with ODVA is continue to be support as a trainer mentor to the coordinators that are at these different locations. And as, for instance, Oregon State University is going to eventually hire a new coordinator. And so one of the partnerships that I've developed between our agency and Oregon State University is that when that new coordinator gets hired, they can get some training from me about some of the things that I did there, about some of the culture, and also, you know, just helping them integrate with other individuals throughout the state of Oregon who are also in the position. I look at individuals at Portland State University, such as Ray Faconda and Kim Duthout from Portland Community College. You know, I've actually talked to them, and one of the things that we would like to see done is that there be a regional conference amongst these coordinators to talk about some of the successes we've had on campus and some of the challenges. And what do we do? Who do we leverage to be more successful on campus? You know, the bottom line is, you know, 5 years ago, there wasn't any coordinators on these campuses. And now we have more than half the schools throughout the state of Oregon that have some element of a coordinator. I will agree, some are doing better than others. I think the model that is the most successful would be looking at places like Arizona State University, where the Pat Tillman Foundation is. Mm-hmm. Looking at Idaho State University, they have a fairly successful program. And I will be boastful and say, looking at Oregon State University, who has had a pretty successful program, even in my time as a campus VSO when they were trying to stand it up. So,
follow up, Chair. Mm-hmm.
Certainly, go ahead.
Yeah, on that line, because I wanted to end with OSU, because as a Beaver, I support that. The other question is, just so for clarification, you mentioned that the existing education fund, when it's available, mm-hmm. to fund different things, but its cap is $150. Is that true?
That is $150 per month, yes.
So,
and if you're going full-time.
Right. So this bill would actually create more flexibility to be able to actually provide more than $150 to a student if they were getting more than that during that gap period.
The way the bill is written, yes. If I look at that,
it would,
yes,
be different than the $150 is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Any Representative Esquivel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, I want my own mind to state on the record. Let me get this straight. Since 9/11, we took the GI Bill, layered it, made it less efficient, and then turned around and gave people ill advice because we didn't know what we were talking about. Is that it in a nutshell?
They did, not us.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah. Representative Esquivel, I will answer that question. And yes, what happened was is because there was so much information floating out there about the post 9/11 GI Bill that changed over time. There are schools, but units in the military that were not aware that the break pay that Jonathan and Representative Evans talked about that went away in 2011, that was a significant change. So you would have unit leadership advising their soldiers that the post 9/11 was working under a different model, and then they would get to the school and they'd go, wait a minute, I thought I got paid during winter break, only to find out, no, you don't, because there's no interval break pay. So one of the things that the VA has done a very good job at is trying to get more information into the students' hands. But one of the things that the universities and community colleges across Oregon and even across the nation have tried to do a better job on is instead of us having a place marker on our websites, we actually have a very robust website that is full of information. We're engaging in Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts and engaging in the Student Veterans of America, trying to get information in the person's hand, you know, as high as 6 months, 9 months, even a year before they leave the military. We're even talking to people before they go on deployments. I know of several National Guard and Reserve soldiers that were referred to me when I was at OSU by buddies who said, hey, you need to go talk to this guy before you go on your deployment so you understand your benefits for when you return. So I think communication is the biggest thing. But on top of that, making sure that the people who are communicating are fully aware of the benefit and how it works and what's the information.
Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So why don't we have a comprehensive all-encompassing plan here that we can stick stakes in the ground and see how we're progressing a package to fix this problem. You gentlemen know the problem, so I'd like to see a complete stem to stern plan.
Yeah.
And then it's up to us as legislators to do our part in the state, but more importantly, it's up to us to share that with our congressional members. We have some people that back veterans 100%. Mm-hmm. We have a couple senators that will do the same thing, so therefore we need to utilize that.
Chair, Vice Chair, absolutely correct. And in fact, if I may add on to a little bit of that, the DD-214s are sent to Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to explain the home of record where individuals are expected to come home to Oregon for people who are getting out of active service. This is unique. And the reason why it's unique is that it gives Oregon an opportunity to talk to the people coming back. There's two chances we have. When they come back through the Oregon National Guard or when they get their DD-214 sent to ODVA. We've been pushing ODVA for years to try to connect with them, and they do an amazing job to have the county veteran service officers connect to them and get started. But there are a lot of possibilities there to make sure that happens. And the only other time we really get a chance to do this is through taxes or through other touch points within the system. And those aren't always positive, right? Touch points might be county jails. They might be, funding sources coming through the VA. One last piece I'll end with is that we have something that we can use congressionally. We could help apply for this. We could have helped apply for it. It's called the RONA, Release of Names and Addresses. And what it is if the state, county, or a nonprofit agency wants to help veterans get access to benefits, and there's a whole bunch of qualifiers on that from the VA. But what it is there's a chance for the state to mail out to the addresses of where veterans are getting benefits a letter or some type of communication. So what I'm saying here is there's touch points of where we can get a hold of them. So if you're talking about putting stakes in the ground, there's a chance and a way we can actually talk to them. This has been a real challenge in the veterans community because a lot of veterans don't want to talk about their services. Mm-hmm. A lot of veterans think they've got their benefits and they just roll with it and, oh, I got it, I'm getting money in the bank, I'm done. But the reality is this is a chance that we can do that. So there's definitely opportunities to do so.
Any other questions? I think that's a continuing theme that we've heard before, this whole how we get veterans notified. And
if we need a liaison there, I volunteer Representative Evans.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Sure. Is there anybody else here who wishes to testify on House Bill 2840? Doesn't look like it. Okay, thank you. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2840. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lively.
You bet. Next, I'll open public hearing on House Bill 2566. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2566 exempts out-of-state businesses operating on a temporary basis solely for the purpose of disaster emergency work from paying state taxes, directs Office of Emergency Management to credential as specified. There may be a fiscal and revenue impact. None have been issued, and there's no subsequent referral.
Okay. So we have
Dave.
Dave. Okay, so first I'll call up Dave Stuckey, please. Please identify yourself for the record, though I know you will. But.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Stuckey, the Deputy Director for the Oregon Military Department, former Director of the Office of Emergency Management. I'm here today to discuss House Bill 2566. This is a good bill. We're in support of it. What the Office of Emergency Management has done for a number of years is trying to ensure that the business community, the business sector, the private sector is involved in emergency management and the recovery thereof. House Bill 2210 that was formally heard here this last week was also very important. It's all in that communications arena. And so we're talking about the chicken and the egg. A couple of weeks ago we talked about is it liquid fuels or transportation that's most important. In our sense, it's always about communications. AT&T helped bring this bill forward, and we think it's a good bill. We had a chance to talk to them a little bit prior to this hearing today, and we think we have a way in which we can help work forward and make a couple of minor tweaks to this and be able to make it fit for the state of Oregon. This bill, as I understand it, and I won't speak for them, was kind of a model across the nation, and it isn't, and every state isn't exactly the same, just like every county is not the same in the state of Oregon. And so, you know, from our standpoint, when we're talking about the private sector, the fire community has been on emergency management pretty hard over the last couple of years, just like the police have. And it's either one of the two is going to be the incident command on the ground. They're the ones that we're in support of and the county is in support of. And the fire community is really fond of saying, you know, bottom line here is we have a Cascadia, we have an earthquake event. We want a 100,000-pound crane at this location on the next operational period. Don't wait 2 weeks. Don't give me 5 days. I want it tomorrow. And so from our standpoint, anything that we can do to help facilitate that, ensuring that the private sector can come in here and help support us in an emergency, is an important thing. So in close, Chair Lively, members of the committee, we appreciate this bill. We think it's very, very important, and we certainly want to help make a couple of minor tweaks in Section 5 and 6. I think we'll be able to actually just kind of eliminate those, and then we should be able to move forward on that.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Stuckey? Thank you for coming.
All right. Sure, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So next we'll have John Powell and George. Both can come up. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing AT&T, and with me is George Granger, president of AT&T Oregon. I'll begin by just briefly describing the bill and how it came about and why we are bringing it forward, and George can fill in any the gaps I'm sure to miss and follow up with the AT&T perspective of why it's an important bill. So as Dave Stuckey mentioned, this bill is kind of the brainchild of the National Council of State Legislatures that after 9/11, Katrina, and Hurricane Sandy formed a study group to look at ways to incentivize and get rid of barriers for private sector response to major disasters. And House Bill 2566 before you is Oregon's version, or what we're trying to make Oregon's version of this National Model Act that to date, I believe at least 12 states have passed in the last couple of years, and we expect more to do the same. What the bill does is the trigger would be a disaster declared by the President of the United States or by the Governor of Oregon, and during a time period of 10 days before that declaration and up to 60 days after that declaration, an emergency response by private infrastructure companies, so communications, electric, gas utilities, water utilities, the basic infrastructure companies, if necessary, can bring in out-of-state employees, out-of-state equipment into Oregon without having to go through and register each piece of equipment with the Secretary of State's office, without having to have each employee that comes to Oregon for 2 weeks have to file a W-2 in Oregon and pay taxes in Oregon and hire an accountant in Oregon, as well as do the same in their home state. So that is the purpose of the bill. We will work with the Dave Stuckey and his policy advisor, Sean McCormick, on an amendment to satisfy the Oregon Military Department. And with that, I'll pass it over to George, who can...
Thank you, John. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for considering the bill today. We really appreciate you taking time to hear it. I also appreciate Mr. Stuckey's comments, and as John indicated, we're happy to work with him on one of the issues that he flagged for us. I think we've already kind of found a pathway forward there. But
if you could,
I think,
just identify yourself for the
I'm sorry. No I'm problem. George Granger. I'm
thank you.
President of AT&T in Oregon. But I also wanted to say that this is, as John indicated, a very important bill, and it's passing all over the country because of the recognition of the need for speed when it comes to restoring emergency communications, restoring the safety and security of Oregon citizens, and getting the economy as quickly as possible back on its feet. So at AT&T, we take this particular role very seriously. We have a large group of volunteer employees who come from all over the country. They're trained to meet these kinds of emergencies. And as John indicated, these are folks who were at 9/11, they were at Sandy, and they were at Katrina. And so they really have a good grasp on what needs to be done, how to work with state leaders in order to restore communications as quickly as possible. But they, to ease the path, to get them here, to get the equipment here, that's what this bill is really aimed at. And it's not, of course, just for AT&T, but as John indicated, for other companies restoring important infrastructure. So again, we really appreciate you taking time to hear the bill today. We look forward to working with Mr. Stuckey and with all of you in passing this legislation.
Thank you. Any questions, Representative Evans?
Not a question, but a comment. I just want to applaud the effort of leading the way on this, working with OEM on this in 07, 08 when there was a significant event. Communication proved itself again, surprise, surprise, is the most important element to any organized response and recovery. So thank you for leading this, and I'm looking forward to supporting this when it gets to that time.
Thank you. Representative Boone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. To Dave Stuckey, and this is a bill that came kind of out of the blue for me, in a sense, reborn, but two colleagues who aren't the usual suspects in the resilience world, so this is great. It means that we're spilling out into the general population. And I love
making
hearing that, because that means that the mother hen can sit back and relax a little.
I like that movement there.
What's that?
Yeah, you like that. Anything else for these witnesses? Thank you both
thank you very much
for being here.
So, it makes me feel old, Mr. Chair, because when you said John Powell, I'm looking at the John Powell I know from like, oh my God, this is another one.
There you go.
There he is.
And there he is, yes.
It was all positive, John,
yeah,
so it's okay.
It was okay.
So next I have, is it Barb Young from CenturyLink? Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barb Young. I'm the legislative director for CenturyLink, and my testimony is pretty easy. It's ditto. So
we enjoy that.
Right. We're in the same position as AT&T is in that, it will not only be a wireless network that needs to be rebuilt, but also the wireline network. And so anything that the legislature can do to provide us with some ability to streamline getting our folks, not only our folks into the state, but equipment and trucks, will be very helpful in getting the communications network back up to speed. So,
thank you. Any questions? Thank you for taking the time to testify. Anybody else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2566? Okay, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2566. And I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2793. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2793 directs Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, County Veterans Service Officers, and Oregon Health Authority to establish health care coverage program and provision of health care services to Republic of Korea veterans of the Vietnam War. Declares an emergency, effective on passage. There's no revenue impact, may have a fiscal impact, statement not issued, and there's no subsequent referral.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Chair Lively, members of the committee, for the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, Westland, Tualatin, bringing you a bill that I brought in 2013, and we didn't solve in 2013, and now we're back 2 years later to have the same conversation, and I have really racked my brain about how could we actually solve this. We had an issue that came up where During the Vietnam War, we used Korean soldiers who were Korean citizens at the time we asked Korea to step in and help us in the Vietnam War. And at the time, those who served were Korean citizens. And since the Vietnam War, many of those Korean citizens who served were told, well, when we made that agreement with Korea, we said, and by the way, the United States will take care of you, and we will be there for you as our ally. We have long since passed that war, and some of the folks who were Korean soldiers served with the Marines in Korea are now American citizens. And so they're caught in a limbo where their former homeland doesn't recognize them for services, and neither do we. And in Oregon, we're talking about a very small population, maybe 40 people on the offset. Nationwide, we're talking less than a few thousand people. They get no GI benefits. They get, like, education benefits. They get no health care benefits. They get no disability payment, no retirement dollars. And they have all of the same health care issues that those who served in Vietnam are afflicted with. Agent Orange, diabetes, PTSD, potentially cancer-causing issues, the chemicals that they were exposed to in the field. And we are letting this population linger without health care coverage. Now, some have their own private care, but a lot of them don't. And so I have really racked my brain about how do we get this done and how do we take this very small population. We talk a lot about what we've done around healthcare and expanding lives, and yet, there are pockets of people who do not have healthcare access, and, this being certainly a deserved population, who served our country when they didn't have to and then have come here, and we've effectively ignored them. They are not here with me today. I'd be happy to get any of you who are interested who did not get a chance to hear their testimony in 2013. I'm sure I've got a videotape for that somewhere, an audio, and you can hear their stories. They are out advocating for support across the nation, and we had a resolution to urge Congress to do whatever, and of course Congress hasn't done anything, and I really hate those bills because Congress isn't interested in solving little problems of pockets of 40 or so people who need the support of the VA. Heck, they can't solve the issues of the people who have access through the VA because they have a DD-214 that they use to separate from the United States military. So this bill, one, recognizes and does not urge Congress to do anything, urges Oregon to do something, but recognizes these soldiers for their service, recognizes them as American citizens, and would consider them for our purposes at the state level, certainly a Vietnam, Korean Vietnam War era veteran. And, is looking at asking if we cannot connect them to VA benefits through the VA and use our veteran service officers, as then is taking a next step. And the bill would prescribe that we would find a way to include them in the Oregon Health Authority under the Oregon Health Plan somehow, even though they may or may not be otherwise eligible. We certainly have moved eligibility requirements for things like poverty levels and whatnot. I do not see that there is a legal issue with us using OHP in terms of connecting these folks to some health care benefits, but we're talking about people who are now, growing population, significant health care issues, and really have nowhere to turn. And if it's not going to be the federal government, then it darn well better be us. And I really don't want to come back here again in 2017 with the exact same bill asking for the exact same thing 2 years from now, because I don't think these folks have time to wait for the right and proper care. So with that, I will take questions and, like I said, happily get you the videotapes and their testimony from 2 years ago.
Thank you. I have two questions. One is, I assume that amendments may be acceptable.
Oh, sure.
Is the primary goal to get health care or to get compensation benefits? Because the health care may be easier than the compensation benefit.
Yeah, and Chair Lively, Representative Evans, this does not speak to compensation. We'd certainly want to try to continue to work with anything they might be eligible for through the VA and use state services like a VSO to support that. But this bill, if you look at the page two, the very first line, this is really about health care. This is about connecting them to health care coverage.
When you use the term benefits, I just wanted to make sure. So mm-hmm. the second thing is, and more of a comment, if this moves forward, I would highly recommend that a slight amendment be made that we send a bill to the United States federal government for them not doing what they should have done. That basically we take care of our own and then we send the bill to the feds as a sign that we take care of the folks that stand with us in the field, because the ROK, especially the ROK Marines, I know served with great valor during Vietnam. Right.
And Chair Lively, Representative Evans, not only would I be happy to make such an amendment, I would be happy to hand carry it to the federal government and leave it on their desk and payment due. And you've got less than 30 days.
I'm sure you would.
So, and then send them off to the credit reporting company. So thank you.
Representative Escobar.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the ROKs were very, very efficient. Very efficient. They were in the same area I was in. And I'm sure a lot of them are suffering from Agent Orange after effects as I do. I have a 30% disability, and I'm sure that they probably have that or more, or exceed that. Mm-hmm. And if the federal government won't help our own citizens because, it's the federal government. You said they don't get any response. Well, gee, I'm shocked. I'm being very sarcastic. that I think it behooves us to take care of these people, because these people were ever as good or better than any of our special forces we had there, and they were very, very good allies.
And Chair Lively, certainly Representative Escobar, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, these are folks who didn't necessarily have to pick up this flag and go and serve with the United States, and then we made a promise, and that's the part that I think just really sets me free, is that we made a promise to these folks, and then somehow, because they're not still in Korea, and I don't even know if we are taking care of the ones, the federal government is making good on the promise to the folks who didn't come here seeking citizenship, but these are people now who belong to us. They are our citizens. They, they serve with valor and honor. They are just culturally, I'll be frank, a very humble people. They're not looking for a lot, and they're just, plus they're military on top of it, and we know our military guys don't like to come to this building looking for a handout, and it's up to those of us to, who care and are passionate about those issues to be that voice, because as you see, there's nobody, I want it on the record, there's nobody in the room today in Veterans Affairs once again. And so, if it's not going to be the seven of us on this committee who use our voice and drive that home with our colleagues, it's going to be no one, because they have no lobbyist. They're not down here lobbying for this bill today. I don't even think they realize that I brought the bill forward again this year, just because I don't want to get somebody's hopes up that we're going to move the dial. And they came and spent a lot of time really educating us. And these resolutions just do nothing. And, you've heard me say before, my own husband is a Iraq veteran, now 37, almost 38 months into the VA. So these are folks who don't have 38 months to process, even if they were legally eligible for benefits. These are folks coming to the end of their life. They're coming to the end of their life, and some of them have no health care coverage. They don't necessarily qualify because of income for our Oregon health plan. They served. This is a very simple bill, and if we can't move a bill like this out of this body and off the floor and through the Ways and Means or wherever the heck else we have to send this to, if we can't do that, then shame on the Oregon legislature, because, I just can't see that we're not going to take care of our soldiers, and this is a really small population who has a very limited window of time left. We can ease their pain and their suffering at the end of their lives.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for bringing this forward. And I think your idea around the healthcare and OHP, it seems to me there ought to be a way in there, but thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
At least we'll have the conversation. Anybody else? Doesn't look like it, but I could have done it without saying that. But
don't everyone rush.
Yeah, don't everybody rush. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2793. Any other business to come before the committee. So we do have some work sessions scheduled for Thursday to start moving some bills. I know you think I probably just fell asleep at the wheel or something, but Brian and I are working on them. So we will have them on Thursday. And we have several other public hearings on Thursday.
Military Department bills.
So.
Okay.
Anything else?
Urge Congress.
Okay.